Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Native geeks, gamers, sci-fi nerds are heading to Oklahoma City for the annual Indigipop X convention this weekend. The event grows every year and includes celebrity appearances, keynote talks on subjects like drawing comics, costume how-tos, and a puppet parade. If you want tips for breaking into the film business or getting behind-the-scenes stories about the Reservation Dog series, this is the place. We'll hear about what's new at this year's Indigipop X convention right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Dignitaries, high-ranking military officials, and indigenous leaders from across the Arctic are in Anchorage, Alaska this week. As KYUK's Emily Schwing reports, they're here for the Arctic Encounter Symposium, the largest annual Arctic policy focus gathering in the United States.
Pearl Brower is the president and CEO of the Ukpiagvik Inupiat Corporation, UIC. She says that people who live every day in the Arctic should be the focus beyond this week's discussions.
You know, when you're thinking about the Arctic while you're here, think about us, think about the people. And that's, I think, really the critical key component of that. You know, as policymakers, as people working within this region, as people making, thinking about the Arctic, we think about the people first because that's what it's all about.
Brower, who's from Utqiagvik, was among six indigenous leaders from across the state who took to the main stage at Anchorage's Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center to kick off this year's symposium with a conversation about their visions for success into the future. Roy Algoin grew up in White Mountain. He was recently named the president and CEO of the First Alaskans Institute, a policy and advocacy nonprofit organization that also focuses on building leadership skills among Alaska Native youth. He says any future success must include younger generations.
I look at our youth as the starting point of new discussion, of change, of functionality, of being capable to move forward with all of the things that we need in our community.
Among the long list of topics on the Arctic Encounter agenda this week are discussions on sustainable energy, infrastructure investment, and emergency preparedness in the Arctic. I'm Emily Schwing.
The Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians is among tribes in Michigan not tapping their maple trees this spring after an unusually mild winter. Despite that, the band was able to continue with parts of the tradition at their sugar shack using maple sap that had been saved or traded for. Interlochen Public Radio's Ellie Katz spoke with Tara John, who works on restoring traditional foodways.
Tara John pulls out a few bottles of maple syrup harvested nearby that she was able to trade for. She pours the liquid into a cast iron pot over the fire and starts stirring.
I'm boiling it down. I'm going to sugar this.
After several hours of careful stirring, the syrup will thicken, eventually reducing down to a granular golden brown sugar. John has led a few sugarbush workshops like this one to teach tribal and non-tribal community members about the tradition. And the band's agriculture department says they're aiming to tap 600 trees next year, up from around 300 last year. They've invested in new equipment and home tree tapping kits to give out to families, thanks in part to a big grant aimed at reinvigorating tribal food traditions. Later in the afternoon, the sun comes out, and more people have joined around the fire. John says this, showing up to Sugarbush with intention. Being outside the sugar shack and near the Inanatigug, the sugar maples, is vital during this year of rest for the people and the trees.
This is what I'm intending for them. And to occupy this space throughout the year to host workshops or harvesting or teachings, storytellings right here so that we can live life with these guys. They miss our laughter and our arguing and our kids running around. They're supposed to be part of our lives. We're coming back. We'll learn how.
That was Ellie Katz, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Drummond Woodsum, a full-service law firm whose nationally recognized tribal nations practice provides services to tribal nations and their enterprises and to companies that do business with tribes across the country. More at dwmlaw.com.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The first and biggest Native pop culture convention is just hours away. For the second year, the First Americans Museum in Oklahoma City is hosting the celebration of comics, sci-fi movies, costumes, and games. This is the ninth year for the Indigenous Pop Culture Expo. Today, we talk with organizers and some of the featured Indigenous creatives about what's new and what's next in Native representation in pop culture. You can help us with this conversation. What do you see on the horizon or at the intersection where Native representation meets popular culture? Share your thoughts, ideas, and questions at 1-800-996-2848. That number again, 1-800-996-2848. We've got the studio lines open right now. Give us a call, and we'll get your comments on the air. Making her way now from California to Oklahoma City is Sarah Wilkinson. She is an oil painter and an illustrator and also a member of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians. Hello, Sarah, and welcome to our show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Joining us from Oklahoma City is Tom Ferris. He is the manager of the FAM store at the First Americans Museum, and he's Oto, Missouri, and Cherokee. Hello, Tom.
Hi. Thank you for having me today.
You bet, Tom. Joining us from Seattle, Washington is Connor Alexander. He's the owner of Coyote and Crow Games. He's a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Welcome to NAC, Connor.
Oteo, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
OCO. And joining us from Oklahoma City is Kristen Gentry. She is the Director of Community Engagement and Outreach for Native Realities. She's also an artist, a photographer, a writer, and a curator, and she's Choctaw. Hi, Kristen. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Halito, everybody. Glad to be back.
Halito, Kristen. It's great to have you back. And I just want to congratulate you and everybody else. 9 years of Indigipop X. Are you at all surprised by how successful the convention has been?
I mean, not really. It's great to see all of our Indigenous people and all of the different things they're doing today. So wanting to celebrate that to me that's not surprising to me. We want to celebrate our people and enjoy that and give them space to do that and bring everybody together. That's kind of who we are as people.
Yeah, for sure. Well, tell us, what new features do you have coming up this year, and what are you most excited about, Kristen?
Okay, one of our new features this year, we're going to have live Indigenous tattooing. We have two Indigenous tattooers. We have Shelley Wewiotin, she is Chickasaw, and then we have Natalie Standing Cloud, the youngest auntie from Res Dogs as well. It's the same person, so she's a tattooer as well. Natalie's going to come and be doing tattoos as well for us. So we've added that. That's one of our new ones. We have, Sarah's one of our new additions this year. She's on the call with us. She's going to come do a beautiful workshop drawing with our kids, fantasy. We have such a request for that. All the manga, fantasy, all that type of genre as well. So we're glad to have her coming in. We have live one-shots of Connor's game, Coyote and Crow. We'll have that this year. People can learn how to play that game and do it right on the spot. So that'll be really great for our people coming in. We have stickball coming back, the glow-in-the-dark stickball. I've heard we've re-upped the poles that they'll be playing with as well. So they've engineered new parts for that. We have Shane Hawk coming in from Don't Whistle at Night. We have all kinds of new people returning. We have a whole day to celebrate Reservation Dogs. We have actors coming in from all over from that. Our big one probably coming in would be Cheese. We have Lane Factor. He's coming up from the Caddo Nation. His tribe will also be out with their cultural club. They're going to be performing dances as well with that. So we're just immersing everybody in contemporary, traditional, like all of it all at once.
Well, Kristen, this sounds like one of those events where the challenge is going to be for participants and attendees, like, well, what do I go to? There's so much going on, so many cool presentations and just like just cool, cool stuff. And glow stick ball, that really caught my attention. And I imagine with you being Choctaw, you can probably appreciate just how unique that is. Tell us more. I mean, how is this going to work? Is this actually going to be a nighttime game of stickball?
So it is. So Ace Greenwood, it was an idea he and the other kind of stickball coaches around Oklahoma have had. They wanted to try to figure out how to play at night. And when IPX came to FAM last year, he had presented that idea. And so they had to like legitimately engineer poles to put lights inside. They're going to be digging trenches to kind of temporarily install them into the field at FAM. So those will light up. He's made an entire ribbon shirt this year with some of those LED lights. So you can see him while he's on the field. The players had to figure out how to be seen, like with the glow paints and lights, how do they light up their sticks? And then one of the biggest challenges Ace found out was how do we keep the ball lit up at night while people are like throwing it and people are doing some tackling. We did do an 18 and up age limit because of the danger it poses at night. Stickball's already kind of dangerous anyways when we play daytime. So we switched it to do it just an adult for that. We have a DJ comes out, Micah Wesley. He's also one of our vendors as well, DJ Werewolf. He's you know, well-known in the Native art scene as well. So that's so much fun because people get to listen to all our music while we're out there. And so many people still come. You know, we tell everyone to bring their powwow chairs, you know, come watch the game, come play the game. And everyone should know that if they're on the field, you could technically be in the game if the ball comes over there. You know.
Yeah, we did a stickball show a while back, and it's no holds barred. And you even spectators, you better be on your toes because you just never know where the action's going to lead. Kristen, I know that cosplay is always a big part of Indigipop and even, you know, comic conventions and such. Tell us more about cosplay from a Native perspective and what that role will be there at the convention.
Okay. So our cosplay, we've kind of taken a slight educational route on it this year because after last year, we've had a lot of questions about can non-Native people enter our cosplay contest? And then it's been a great way for us to show the difference between that stereotype we get in that costume side versus like cosplay and like our regalia. So we kind of realized really quick it's been a great way. People can visually see immediately. Like Keyshawn Bread, amazing person. They're going to come in. They're one of our judges helping us with panels and everything. So Keyshawn, if you think of maybe someone in like their command, like Keyshawn in their Comanche regalia, you know, we could show an image of that and talk to, you know, our guests and people coming like, this is not a costume. This is our traditional clothing. And then show Keyshawn in their cosplay. So you kind of see the difference and, you know, I'm reiterating that cosplay comes from the words costume play. So ironically, this new pop culture of cosplay has actually helped us kind of work through like our representation and stereotype issues. And then you take in, you know, for, you know, since we were all created, basically, we have been sewing and making and building and sculpting as Indigenous people. So you take all those skills, those sewing skills, our cosplayers are, it blows my mind. I almost think our con probably has some of the best cosplayers because of that. We have those sewing skills, sculpture, painting, bead work, and how they indigenize those costumes, how they create new cosplays for, like, Hero Twins by Del DeForest. I know people cosplay as Aragorn Starr's characters. It's this huge intermix of all these people we've all grown up with and creating these characters, and now we get to have our own superheroes, and our children get to see those. That's pretty amazing.
That really is amazing, Kristen. And like you say, like with so much emphasis now in our communities with fashion and design work and things like that, it just seems like such a good fit for some of the cosplay activities. Let's talk to Sarah Wilkinson now. Let's hear from one of the artists who will be there at Indigipop X this year. And Sarah, again, welcome to the show. And give us an example of where people might see your work there this weekend.
Sure. So like we were mentioning, I'm doing a panel I'm so excited about. I believe it's on Friday, and it's going to be kind of like a how to draw tutorial. And I ended up choosing one of my favorite Star Wars characters, which was Princess Leia. So I'm going to do a kind of a step-by-step on how I, you know, map out a face. And I'm also going to go a little bit more detailed into like lighting and shadow and stuff. And yeah, so I'm super excited about that. I'm also going to have a table in the artist section, and I'm going to have lots of prints. I have original pencil sketches that I'll bring. I have these really cool play mats, which are great for gaming, like, you know, like role-playing games. They're basically giant mouse pads, but they're awesome. So I'll have those and a few other cool trinkets and things at my table. So, yeah.
Oh, this just sounds too cool. We are just getting the conversation started here on Native America Calling today. In Digipop X, huge, huge event taking place this weekend in Oklahoma City. And we are talking now with both creators and organizers for what is in store. So many cool, cool events and happenings. Cosplay, glow stick ball, OCO TV, Nerd 49 hand drum contest, gaming, Navajo Star Wars. Some of these topics, some of these ideas you've already heard about on our show because we featured them on previous episodes of Native America Calling. But we're going to learn a lot more about what's in store here for folks in Oklahoma City. So please stay with us. We got a lot more to talk about. And if you've got questions, maybe you're on your way right now headed to Indigipop X, give us a call. Tell us what you're most excited about. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Lakota writer Tiffany Midge has a new poetry collection coming out, and Ojibwe mystery writer Marcy Rendon turns to poetry to connect with her White Earth home. They're among the poets helping us mark National Poetry Month on the next Native America Calling.
Support from Dartmouth College, hosting its first Tribal Leadership Academy August 4th to the 10th in New Hampshire. Up to 25 new or appointed tribal government leaders and a group of experienced presenters will consider intergovernmental relations, economic development, healthcare, natural resources, and tribal law and order. Dartmouth College will cover the travel and attendance costs. Application available at DartmouthTribalLeadershipAcademy.com. Application deadline is May 1st, 2024.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and we're talking with folks coordinating and appearing at Indigipop X, the big Native comic book and pop culture convention, now in its second year at the First Americans Museum in Oklahoma City. Are you a fan of Comic-Cons? Are you on your way to Indigipop X? Tell us what you are most excited about, what you're looking forward to. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. One of our guests today, Sarah Wilkins, is an artist. She's a member of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians. And Sarah, that's exciting. I especially like your panel there, How to Draw Princess Leia. And it sounds like something that's going to be really user-friendly for kids especially. And tell us more about conventions. I know you're a veteran convention goer. And what do you like best about conventions as an artist?
So as an artist, I love when people come up to my table. I love talking to new people. a lot of times people bring their kids, and it's kind of like a bit of a vacation weekend. So they're super excited. There's all kinds of, you know, it's probably a bit of sensory overload, but it's so much fun, and it's packed into just a weekend. But everyone's excited about each other, and they want to, like, see new things. And I get to see people like that, you know, every weekend I do a convention, and it's absolutely one of my favorite things. Another thing too is I do a lot of industry work. So I'm officially licensed with Lucasfilm. So I do a lot of cool fan stuff like that. And then I also do original content, like oil paintings. And those kind of hit a different chord with people. It's a more like mental health and like, you know, illustrating emotions. So it hits people on like both sides of the brain, I hope, like their fan side and then also their, you know, human side. So it's absolutely my favorite thing.
Now, you did a Revenge of the Sith poster. Tell us about that.
So that was actually one of my first like officially licensed jobs that I did with Lucasfilm way back. It was actually, I've done posters, but that was actually a trading card set with Topps Trading Cards. And it was amazing. I was actually still in college for art. I went to school for illustration in Michigan, and I had been kind of trying to figure out how to get into doing Star Wars art. And so I went through Topps, and basically they took my art to Lucasfilm and they said, okay, like she's okay to work on our property. And so that was my very first job. And I was 19 at the time. So I was super young. I didn't know what I was doing, but I kept working with them. I'm actually currently working on a poster for a particular Star Wars project right now. So it's been my longest professional relationship, and it's great because I'm also a huge Star Wars fan. I was raised on Star Wars, so.
Like so many of us were. Sarah, fantasy art like you do, how do you approach that differently than, say, because we do a lot of art shows here at Native America Calling. We have beaders and traditional painters and people who make pottery. How do you approach what you do differently than, say, somebody who might do more traditional Native art?
Sure. So I did that industry work for about 10 years solid, and there was nothing that I was doing that was like my own ideas. It was all working for other companies and it was great, but I started feeling like I needed to be doing more and I needed to be saying more with my art. So I was fully doing acrylic painting. Like all of the industry work I do is acrylic. And so I ended up learning oil painting and using that to switch over to this more personal work. And so that has been about, like I said, like mental health, things that people don't really talk about. So my background is in illustration, but I was trying to like fit it into my brain, like how to switch over to this really like ethereal, you know, mental health. So I started viewing it as illustrating an emotion. Or, you know, illustrating an intangible thing, like how do you do that? And so that's kind of been my lifelong quest, at least for the last 10 years, is to try and do that, but also try to incorporate my culture and start bringing, you know, those things into the mental health things that I do with my art. So it's showing, it's allowing like visibility. So I feel like it's kind of my job to do that, to try and like, you know, educate people and allow people conversation. That's another great thing about the conventions is it it brings up really good conversations. So,
Sarah, I like how you refer to your work as a lifelong quest. And I know the next stop on this quest is an airport for you so you can get to Oklahoma City. And I don't want to take up any more of your time. So I appreciate you joining us, and safe travels to Oklahoma. And I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hope to see people at the show this weekend as well.
All righty. Our next guest, Tom Ferris, is the manager of the FAM store there at the First Americans Museum. Tom, I want to ask you to tell our listeners a little bit more about some of these other panels and workshops in addition to the ones we've already heard about.
Well, so some of the ones that I think are really interesting are some opportunities for people to find out how to get involved in the industry. We have one that will, you know, describe how you become represented as an actor or a model in the industry and kind of how you get your foot in the door. Well, the one I am moderating, I believe the term has been coined Hunkles panel, H-U-N-C-L-E-S, which is featuring Yancey Redcorn. I don't know if anybody has been following his social media, but his exploits on several red carpets, representing his role as Chief Bonnie Scott and the Killers of the Flower Moon, have been or have become legend. He's been cited with Anne Hathaway, pretty much anybody you could really imagine. So the social media term that started going around is he had big uncle energy. And so we wanted to kind of capitalize on this kind of viral sensation. And we incorporated not only Yancey, but Brent Greenwood, who is a local Oklahoma artist who had a touch of viral fame earlier this year as well. And Micah Wesley, who's one of our participating artists and the DJ for Glow Stickball, who, you know, all these gentlemen have a definite style of their own. And I think kind of encompass the or personify the idea of a hunkle.
And for our listeners who might not be familiar, I mean, how would you define a hunkle?
Oh, man. You know, that I don't know that I'm the one to define it. I think what the noticeable attributes are a Native man who's probably culturally attuned, but definitely has a contemporary flair and style of his own. I'm sure Yancey would say they're very humble. Hey.
Oh, geez, I'm wondering if I could qualify as a hunkle. Yeah, I'm going to look into it. It sounds so cool. Tom, I'm looking at the agenda now, and I see one workshop titled Lessons from a Hollywood Stuntman. That sounds really cool. What's that all about?
Well, so that's Gene Braverock, who was featured in Wonder Woman, as well as Dark Winds. And again, that's just one of those opportunities for people to learn how you get involved in the industry. He's before, of course, being featured in those films and movies, he was a stuntman for a number of years. And so he's had a long career and is just a great source or resource for people to kind of learn how does one become a stuntman? That's not exactly a job that you can fill out an application for. And it requires, I'm sure, some very specific talents that Gene apparently possesses.
Yeah, for sure. And we did a stuntman show earlier this year, and it was really interesting just to hear the perspectives of those folks and what all they have to go through and the training that's involved with that as well. So that sounds like an exciting panel. I also see you have a Q&A with regard to the Marvel Echo series. Who will be there at that event?
Well, we're keeping that deeply under wraps. We want it to be a surprise. Now, we have a number of folks involved with that. In addition to just several people who've worked with Marvel, Roy Boney will be on hand. Pishon Bread is going to be definitely involved in the Echo panel. We've got so much Native talent that is so visible in the comic book realm or in all these pop culture realms that are, I guess, really more the dominant culture. So we're really excited to kind of showcase those people that are doing big things for Native people right now.
And Tom, what about the participants and also just the attendees, the general public that will come in over the weekend and check out in Digipop X? Does it draw from mostly Native communities, or are there people of all different backgrounds that like to attend?
Oh, well, we wanted to be very clear. We're open for everybody. We are showcasing Native talent, and we're really putting forth the best of what, you know, is being created by Indigenous creators today. But we realize and recognize that you don't have to be Native to appreciate those things. You can be a fan of Echo. You can be a fan of Reservation Dogs, but you don't necessarily have to be Native. And I think the representation that we're seeing today is finally giving us an accurate picture of Native culture. And so it's the best time to be a non-Native fan of Native culture, because you're really getting a true representation of what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Really, really interesting, really insightful. Appreciate it, Tom. Let's talk now with Connor Alexander, owner of Coyote and Crow Games. And Connor, I know that you folks will be sponsoring the game room, Coyote and Crow. It's going to have a big presence there at IndigiPopX. And for people who might not be familiar with Coyote and Crow, what is it exactly, and who does the game appeal to?
Yeah, so Coyote and Crow was our first game out of the gate. We did a huge amount of fundraising on Kickstarter. The game is very similar to Dungeons & Dragons. It's a classic sit around the table, roll dice, and tell stories kind of gaming. And I don't think I can imagine a better pairing for a storytelling game than an Indigenous setting with Indigenous folks, right? Like, we're all such good storytellers. Almost all of our cultures have incredible depth of storytelling embedded into them. And so the game is set in an alternate future where the Americas were never colonized. So you've got a little bit of science fiction because it's set in the future. You've got some fantasy, and you have this chance to imagine Indigenous cultures completely untouched by all of the things that went on with colonization. And so it gives this sort of clean slate to that history. And it's been so well received. We've gotten a number of awards. And, you know, this year for Indigipop, rather than just have a booth, we thought it would be great to sponsor an entire game room. So while that Coyote and Crow, the role-playing game, is our sort of flagship title, we were also doing other games as well. We have a fun little push-your-luck dice game called Nasi. We have our brand new game called Wolves, which I'm very proud of. It's not releasing until May, but we have about, I think, 12 copies that we're going to be selling in advance there in the game room. The other thing that I'm really proud of is that for the game room, we've got some other game designers there. Will Thompson from Absurdist Productions is there. He's the designer of a game called Paleo Vet and a new one called Winter Rabbit, which is based on some Cherokee culture. And then we have Burn the Fort from Klee Benali, who just recently passed. If you don't know Klee was amazing. But I'm so glad that his partner Princess is going to be there with the game called Burn the Fort. And I'm really excited to get my copy of that, my hands on that.
I love the title, yes. Burn the Fort.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very much like Klee, right? He was so in your face with his activism and so opinionated on colonialism and fighting for Native rights. And so I'm really excited to be able to play that game. But yeah, so our new game, Wolves, I'm very excited about as well. Wolves is an unusual game. It is a semi-cooperative game where players take on the role of a community leader, and each of the communities is trying to survive through the winter. If any community fails to survive through the winter, everybody loses the game. So players are incentivized to share resources throughout the game. And it's a mechanic that I don't really see a lot in most popular board games today, which is this idea of we all do better if we all work together to survive. And I'm very excited to see this game hit the table at IndigiPopX.
Well, right on, Connor. I want to bring another guest. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the role-playing games, but let's talk now with Lee Francis, Dr. Lee Francis IV. He is the CEO and founder of Native Realities. He's Laguna Pueblo. And he is there on the ground in Oklahoma City right now. He's got a few minutes to talk with us. Hello, Lee. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Gwatsi. Good to hear from everybody again.
Dwaye, brother. And, geez, we're getting a good rundown here on the event. Just give us a quick description here about what you're most excited about, Lee.
It's always so amazing to be here for DigiPopX, and every year it's just like this constant evolution. I think I'm always the most excited about being able to be in a space so much native artistry, and in this way that really shows how we adapt our art, things that we love, culture elements, the comic elements, the science fiction, the indigenous futurisms, all of that is always, so compelling to me. And the reason I found this and started this in the first place was to be able to showcase, all of that talent that sometimes can museums and doesn't make these spaces because there's this conception of what the art should look like. And so okay. Digipop is a space where everybody gets to just hang out and be awesome and me.
Awesome. Lee, you know what? We're gonna take a break here, and our producers are going to work with your phone line there. You're cutting out just a little bit. Okay, so just hang in there. Be patient. We're going to take a short break, and we're also going to come back and take a caller. And we're learning all about Indigipop X taking place this weekend in Oklahoma City. Sounds like there's some sort of activity, some sort of panel, some sort of workshop, some sort of presentation for people of all ages and all backgrounds. We'll talk more with our guests after this short break, but if you've also got a question, give us a call. Our phone lines are still open, 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by Archaeology Southwest. Did you know almost all major archaeological sites in the Southwest have been looted or vandalized? Looting and vandalism impact Indigenous people, past, present, and future. Every day, countless Native American cultural items are lost or damaged forever through looting and vandalism. Federal and tribal laws protect archaeological resources. More information about ending archaeological resource crime and how to submit a tip at savehistory.org and on social media at savehistory.
You have attuned to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and we're talking about Indigipop X. If you are a fan of Native comic books and other forms of pop culture, this show is for you. And we've got the founder of Native Realities on the line right now, Dr. Lee Francis IV. Lee, I see also on the agenda at Indigipop X a tract called The Puppet Institute. Tell us more about what that's about.
Yeah, so much like we had with the Comic-Con itself, we wanted to showcase and bring together Native puppeteers. And so we did a little lead-in track, which is where I'm at today, a pre-conference, if you will, that brings together and finds a place for Native puppeteers to talk about cool work that they're doing, learn from each other, and build these strong networks. Because we have this deep history and we have this deep relationship to what they call object manipulation or puppetry. And there's some incredible puppeteers, Native puppeteers are out there. They're doing amazing work in their communities. And so we wanted to start and found this institute, if you will, this Native Puppetry Institute, to have a place to showcase that and to start cultivating the next generation of Native and Indigenous puppeteers here in Turtle Island.
Now, Lee, there's been this recent period of firsts for Native representation. Of course, everybody was paying attention with Killers of the Flower Moon and Lily Gladstone's Oscar nomination. Of course, we've had Res Dogs, the Echo series, just so much going on. How do we keep this momentum going, Lee?
Yeah, it's just been so astounding this year to see so much of Native country turning out for support, for all of these folks that are doing such incredible work. And I always want to point out that it's not that it's the first time that we're really being recognized outside of our own communities, because it's not to say that like there haven't been amazing Native films before this or made amazing Native actors before all of this. So, like all of these things are so incredible, but we've been doing it for a while. So I think the way to continue this is to continue to take that spirit and that heart and keep keep pushing forward with everybody. Keep, you know, showing up to these events like Indigipop and, you know, these amazing fashion shows and the futurism festivals and puppetry. I think we just need to continue to bring all of the things that we've been doing and just keep pressing it nonstop, because that's how we continue to show the world that A, we're still here, and B, that we've been doing this great stuff for a very long time.
Lee, how much goes into planning in Digipop? Is this like a year-round endeavor for you?
Yeah, it's a year-round endeavor. We have a great, fabulous crew. Kristen Gentry has been just phenomenal in putting things together. Tom Ferris over here at First American Museum. And we start planning, you know, like, okay, everybody gets a week break. Okay, now let's start planning for next year. So these are year-round endeavors. But when you have so many good folks that have been a part of this community that have been working with us for so long, it makes that journey so much easier and so much smoother. And you know, it's such a joy.
And what do you like best about the Oklahoma City venue?
Our partners here are so amazing. First American Museum, we get to take over the whole place, which is just always fantastic. I think it's beautiful to have representation at this crossroads of Indian country with, you know, the 39 tribal communities and nations that are here. They're represented at First American Museum. I think it's a lovely venue. Even when it's a little windy, it's such a beautiful location. And I'm always honored that we get to be here.
Well, Lee, I know your time is limited as well. You've got a lot on your plate today. So really appreciate you coming on, taking a little bit of time and talking with our listeners today. Congratulations again on all your success.
Bella, hey, thanks for having me.
You bet, Lee. Let's take a caller now, Chanupa, who is listening in Pine Ridge, South Dakota on Keeley Radio. Hello, Chanupa.
Hey, brother. Thank you for a good topic on today's show. For the comic industry, I still have two comic books from Marvel Comics that go back as when I was a kid. I was 7 years old. And the Marvel comic guy that I was very, very inspired by was Warpath, the Manhunter, okay? He was an indigenous cartoon figure. He was masculine. He had three feathers, bow and arrow, tomahawk, all that good stuff. And he was the one that Thor and all them other guys, man, had to use him to track down, you know, different villains in the comic industry, you know, when they make these things. But one of the things he did do, and I also always highlighted it in some of my work, he did say, "Hokahe," and then those comics, it has that on it, okay? I think I should send you on your text message phone, Sean, what that looks like. And when you see that little red guy, man, he was masculine. And that's what I wanted to contribute, because maybe some of the people that are doing this comic networking, there was another comic book that came out, but I can't remember it offhand. It was just recently, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. And so I hope a lot of our people that are doing in this venue keep that work good, because as a kid, now I'm 66 years old, that was my favorite hero, Warpath, the Manhunter.
Warpath.
Thank you for another brilliant show.
Yeah, thank you, Chanupa. I'm Googling Warpath right now, and it looks like he's still an active character. Connor, what can you tell us about Warpath, the Marvel superhero? Are you there?
Honestly, I think my memories of him are a little faded now. It's been so long since I've read about him, but I do remember reading him, probably not since, I think, the late 80s. But, man, I can picture him completely in my head right now.
Right, right. Well, Connor, let's talk a little bit more about the role-playing games, because, you know, I played role-playing games as a kid. I was sharing with you there used to be a Western game called Boot Hill, and you could create these Western characters. I made Native characters, and we'd go out and battle, like, gunfighters and things like that. But one thing I remember about them is they're pretty time-consuming. You really have to invest a lot of energy into just getting into the game. They're not quick games that you just wrap up in, you know, an hour or something like that. So how do you encourage people to partake in games like this where there is an investment of time and also other resources?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that we've tried to branch out beyond role-playing games into board games. It's also steep, right? Like the core book for the game is $70, and a lot of folks don't have $70 to drop on a game. So we've tried really hard to offer digital alternatives. If you've got a computer or any kind of like pad, there are digital versions that are much cheaper, so that you can get all of the information right there on your desktop. And then there are systems like Roll20, which allow you to play online with your friends in case you don't have somebody who's local with you that can sit down at the table. Roll20 lets you play online with friends and family who are far away. So there are things like that, but I think it's also a matter of the kind of gamer that you are. Do you want to sit around and tell stories that allow you to immerse yourself for a few hours of time? If so, then role-playing games are great for you. But if not, if you only have a little bit of time, or maybe you've got younger children at the table who don't have that kind of patience, that's where I think traditional tabletop board games really come into play. I think they've gotten so much better over the last couple of decades at telling complex themes, but still being enjoyable. I think most of us probably grew up on things like Monopoly, where you're just rolling a couple of dice and moving around a board. And I think in the last few decades, they've gotten so much better at incorporating good themes and better ideas. And I think that's one of the things that I'm trying to do with my company, is bring some indigenous concepts into those board games so that a wider audience can sort of see that in action on their table, especially non-natives. I think non-natives don't have a good or an accurate view. Lee was discussing earlier about how non-natives are finally starting to getting to see us a little more accurately. And I'm hoping that's being portrayed in my games as well.
Connor, really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing all this information. And again, congratulations to you and all the success with Coyote and Crow Games. Just a really, really exciting game and interesting conversation. Appreciate it, Connor.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You bet. Kristen, I want to go back to you because another interesting item on the agenda is a grand celebration with an honoring for Next Benedict. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, so our grand celebration will be on Saturday at 1 o'clock. We wanted to welcome everyone to Oklahoma versus just like a land acknowledgement type of concept. So we're bringing in the Cherokee Youth Choir with their director, Candace Bird, wife of Roy Boney. And so they'll be singing as well as a performance. We'll have Miss Indian Oklahoma. And then we've invited Moise Greenwood. He is the son of Brent Greenwood, who's on the Hunkles panel. So I guess that would make Moise a Hunkle in training. He'll be singing that honor song for Next. I actually come from the Owosso Public Schools school district originally up in that area, and I got to serve on the JOM Parent Committee in that community. So we bring in that school on our education day. We're going to bring Owosso down here. It's all paid for with our grants. So the school's going to come down, and we've invited the family to come join us. We'll have that honor song. We have some ribbons about suicide awareness. Those are some really heavy topics, but in our Native communities, unfortunately, we always, it's hard for us to not be reminded of all of those things we are, battling. We have several, MMIW groups here. We just really want to kind of keep that part of our culture and, a way to honor him and, our community, give him and his family support. And we, we love everybody that's coming out for that. And we have, like I said earlier, we have the Caddo Cultural Club. They're going to come out right after that. So they're going to be singing again. All while we have all the fun stuff going. We want to, keep it a celebration of the positive things and celebrate Next. Make it a happy situation. And I also wanted to throw on, when you guys were talking about Warpath, we have John Proudstar coming in. And when you guys said that, I kind of looked it up because I remember seeing images of John creating about Thunderbird, and that's where that link was, Warpath at one point. I don't know all of it because I'm not a huge comic book person, but I know that Warpath and Thunderbird, I believe it's the same brother. Yeah, so they're that relation. So, and John will be here, and he's the creator of Tribal Force. He's also one of the actors from Reservation Dogs as well. So if there's any, if Chinupa's still listening, maybe he can get in contact with John to get some new Warpath and Thunderbird items.
Yeah, yeah, good information. We'll share it with Chanupa. Kristen, also, it looks like you've got some indigenous cooking panels going on as well.
We do. So one of our chefs is coming down. She was actually tasked with keeping Leo fed during Killers of the Flower Moon. So we have Chef Nico Albert. She's coming, Williams, coming down from Tulsa. She does amazing storytelling and talking about that plant medicine and the relationship we had and all those ancestral seed gardenings and how that, you know, turns into our contemporary dishes today, and then helping people regrow those plants maybe that they hadn't been growing, that our tribes have revitalized all through food. And it's just it's such a healthy way to see all of the things that we traditionally grew, how we already had those complex knowledges of like crop rotation. I know in the Southeast, like when those crops were resting, those were our fields that were growing our wild berries for us. So kind of just that mix of we already had that technology and it's now considered like a futurism technology as we go back into those places. And then it kind of shows everybody, like everybody understands food, I think, universally. You get to taste some of the things they make. We also have Chef Britt Reed coming in to teach and do different types of storytelling, different types of cooking. Britt spent time up in the Pacific Northwest, so it'll be interesting to kind of see all that influence and what she's going to be teaching. Britt also brings in the Inchunwa podcast, which relates back to our tattooing. So Inchunwa is a Choctaw language word. It means like to mark, the mark makings on our body. And so we have like experts in the field for tattooing coming in to be on that panel. And they're going to be recording that live. So they'll get both sides. You can get the tattoo and you can also learn all about our traditional parts to that.
Thank you, Kristen. Tom Ferris, back to you. About how many attendees do you expect this weekend for Indigipopex?
We're expecting over 2,000 people this weekend. It's going to be a big crowd. We're really excited just to host so many folks and get to expose them to everything that's being created by natives right now.
And for folks who might not be able to make it to Oklahoma City, where can they follow? Where can they learn more?
Well, you can definitely go to the IPX website, which is indigipopx.com. And you can check out the full slate of information of where all the panels are happening, what times those are happening, and all the additional events that are just going on as part of this massive event.
And any other information, any other highlights you want to share, Tom, as we begin to wind down the show?
I'm just excited. You know, this has been a year of planning, and it's all literally we're watching people unload stuff right now from the windows of FAM right now. And we're just excited that it's about to kick off and just to have so many people here enjoying and experiencing everything that natives are doing.
Now, is Indigipopex, is it just this one conference, this one convention, or are there other, smaller events throughout the year that are all kind of branded under the Indigipop aegis?
Well, so this is the main event. This is probably the largest one. I do know and participated in one in Tacoma earlier, well, I guess later last year, called the Indigenous Futurisms Festival. I know that they're planning one coming up in North Carolina soon. So Native Realities and A Tribe Called Geek, they're really stepping up their game to really start spreading the good word of Native pop culture throughout the country.
Well, we're going to have to wrap up the conversation now. Big thank you to all our guests who joined us today to talk about Indigipopex this weekend in Oklahoma City. Dr. Lee Francis, Kristen Gentry, Tom Ferris, Sarah Wilkinson, and Connor Alexander. April is National Poetry Month. Join us tomorrow for a discussion with Native poets. Who's your favorite Native poet? We'll talk again soon. I'm Sean Spruce.
Native Forward Scholars Fund scholarships are open now. Native Forward supports Native students' higher education journeys, offering over 40 scholarship opportunities, programs, and resources designed for Native students. Info and applications at nativeforward.org, who support this show. Lakota-made indigenous first medicines and eco-friendly personal care products are small batch prepared in the Lakota traditions using sustainably harvested natural and organic ingredients, and all can be found at lakotamade.com, who support this show.
Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.